Washington, D.C. The images were horrific. A man's legs, brown skin sloughed off, exposing the yellow-red meat underneath. A layer of jet fuel burning on top of the ocean, charring a chunk of bone. Worst of all, bits of a stuffed toy, blood smearing its white fur. The first reports of an explosion in Mumbai showed up on Twitter 90 seconds after the jet was hit. A half hour later, 12:30 a.m. in India, 2 p.m. in Washington, the Associated Press and Reuters confirmed a plane crash. The Indian Navy had sent ships to search the waters west of the city, Reuters said. 2 hours later, a bleary-eyed spokesman for the Indian Ministry of Civil Aviation identified the jet as a United Airlines flight bound for Newark. The situation is difficult. At this point, we cannot expect survivors. Almost immediately, Reuters broke the news that the jet's captain had reported missiles in the air seconds before the plane exploded. Then, an Indian news agency reported that airport authorities had surveillance video that showed a missile striking the jet. By 8 p.m. Eastern, CNN and Fox and everyone else had the video. The anchors murmured somberly, "Disturbing. We want to warn you so you can have your children leave the room." The video was silent, not even a minute long. The camera was fixed and faced west from the airport's control tower. It didn't capture the actual launch. The missiles were already airborne when they entered the frame. From left to right, twin red streaks rose toward an invisible target. After 5 or 6 seconds, they faded, too far away for the camera to catch. But they hadn't stopped their chase. The proof came with the explosion, a white flash tearing open the night, resolving into a mushroom cloud. The shockwave hit seconds later, rattling the camera as the cloud in the distance grew. "Horror in the skies," the crawl under the video said. And this time, CNN wasn't exaggerating. India's Navy would call off its search by morning. No one could have survived. The inevitable next act would be assigning blame. The video ended. CNN cut to a serious-looking man in a gray suit with a white shirt, Fred Yaunt, terrorism analyst at Rand Institute. John Wells flicked off the screen before he had to hear Yaunt. A man squeezed a trigger in the dark. A few seconds later, almost 300 people were dead. Whatever Yaunt had to say wouldn't change those bare facts. Wells had quit the Central Intelligence Agency years before, but he'd never escaped the secret world. He knew now he never would. He felt like a swimmer fighting a whirlpool. He was strong enough to avoid being sucked down, but not to reach land. He could only tread water, knowing that one day his body would fail. He was in his early 40s, but his chin was still sturdy, his shoulders thick with muscle. Only the patches of gray hair at his temples and the permanent wariness in his brown eyes betrayed his age and his too close acquaintance with the world's sins. Now he lay back on his bed, stared at the ceiling. He was in room 319 in the courtyard by Marriott at the Washington Navy Yard, a hotel favored by Randy congressmen for its nearness to their offices. More than anything, Wells wanted to close his eyes, sleep. But he had a plane to catch in less than 4 hours. He had arrived in the United States only the night before. Now he was going back the way he'd come, over the Atlantic, bound for London and Zurich, to meet with a man who didn't much want to see him. Then, maybe, to Mumbai. Wells understood. He didn't want to see himself either. Not at the moment. He was carrying himself around like a rain-soaked cardboard box about to burst. Too many miles. And too much death. Wells blamed himself for the downing of the jet. A few days before, he discovered the truth about a plot to maneuver the United States into war with Iran. He'd nearly found a way to stop it, but his enemies had outplayed him. He'd failed. Wells turned out the bedside light. He closed his eyes and, for 60 seconds, thought of the jet's passengers. Then he made himself forget them. Nothing else to do. A light knock stirred him. The room door swung open. "Nice opsec," Ellis Schaefer's gravelly, mumbly voice. The lights flicked on. If it came to that, I could kill you in my sleep, Ellis.
Hitting you hard?
I'm all right. Wells pushed himself up.
Of course you are.
Schaefer sat on the bed next to Wells.
They probably didn't even know what hit them.
Except the captain, obviously.
You should be a grief counselor.
Should I tell you they're in heaven, with 72 million virgins each?
Ellis.
Too soon?
Wells had been raised Christian, but converted to Islam more than a decade before, in the mountains of Pakistan. Schaefer was a Jew who had declared his atheism at his bar mitzvah more than 50 years earlier. Unlike Wells, he still worked for the CIA. Barely. Until one of the new director's new men got around to dropping off a letter of resignation for him. Over the years, Wells and Schaefer had worked together on a half-dozen operations. But they had never faced a mission as tricky as this one.